Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho.
Welcome to Talk is Jericho. It is the pod of thunder and rock and roll, and today it's all about wrestling. It's all about American Gladiators. It's all about bodyguarding Benny Hinn. It's all about Rico Constantino, and he is here, man. What a story and a career he has had. He's like the Forrest Gump of the WWE. He got into wrestling a little late. He was already 38 years old, had already won American Gladiators, and worked private security for Benny Hinn, the televangelist. Wait to hear the stories. His American Gladiators tryout was insane. And then the private security for Benny Hinn has stories, very, very strange stories. He also worked with the Secret Service, and that's before he even got into wrestling. We'll also find out how all that eventually led him to the WWE and winning the tag team championship twice. He's got an incredible story, and I'm so glad I was able to speak with him when I did, because Rico is having a lot of issues these days. He's very sick, suffering from some serious medical issues, and that, of course, has led to some serious medical bills. And in the fine tradition of Talk is Jericho, he needs some help, and we're going to give it to him. So if you want to chip in a few bucks to help Rico Constantino, you remember Rico, the guy with the sideburns and the flamboyant outfits, and he's going to remind you of all the different crazy stuff he's done to entertain you. Please give him a few bucks to continue for him to help get the medical help he needs. Please do so. Do it through PayPal. Rico gets 100% of anything that you can send to him, whether it's a dollar or 50 cents or $5. You can donate a few dollars by going to paypal.com and sending the money to this email address, wwericoconstantino@gmail.com. That's wwericoconstantino, C-O-N-S-T-A-N-T-I-N-O@gmail.com. wwericoconstantino@gmail.com. It'd be so great if we could all support Rico, show him how much we appreciate all he gave us during his time in the WWE, entertaining us as well as on American Gladiators. But before we get to my conversation with Rico, I'm doing a couple spoken word shows in Ireland, as you know. The Words of Jericho. Listen in, man. The June 7th date at Mandela Hall is already sold out completely, VIPs and general admission, but there's still a few tickets left to the June 8th date in Dublin at Vicar Street. We added some more seats, and they're getting snapped up pretty quick as well. Get those at Ticketmaster.ie. And, of course, the Fozzy Judas Rising Tour kicks off May 5th in Virginia Beach, Virginia, at the Lunatic Luau. Check out a picture of the new Fozzy 2017, a brand-new band picture on my Instagram. I posted it this week. Kings and Sons of Texas will be joining us for most of the Judas Rising Tour in May. And you can get tickets to any show and also buy VIP meet and greet tickets at FozzyRock.com. Let me take 2 seconds to talk about the Fozzy meet and greet program. I mean, dude, we lay it down. You get a private mini concert. You can make some requests. If you can sing, come on stage and sing with us. You'll meet everybody in the band, including me. Take pictures, autographs, Q&A. It's one of the best VIP programs you're ever going to be a part of. Be a part of it. Don't miss out at FozzyRock.com. Go check it out. And we will be in, like I said, Virginia Beach on May 5th. May 6th, the Revival in Canton, Georgia. 7th, Carolina Rebellion. The 9th is at the Concourse in Knoxville, Tennessee. 10th, Trixie's Entertainment Complex in Louisville, Kentucky. I expect to see Jim Cornette and Kenny, the star maker, Bolin, will be there. At the 11th, at the Rave in Milwaukee. That's with All That Remains. That's a huge show. The 12th, at the Green Bay Distillery in Green Bay, Wisconsin. 14th, Northern Invasion in Somerset, Wisconsin. 16th at the Diesel Club in Pittsburgh, 17th at the Chameleon Club in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, at the 18th, it's 89 North in Pajog, New York. So, somebody scolded me for my pronunciation of that. Hopefully they said it's P-A-T-J-O-G. So Pajog. Sorry if I'm still butchering that. You guys know where you are. You know I love you. I was born in Long Island. And May 19th at the House of Independence in Asbury Park, in New Jersey, home of Bruce Springsteen. And the 20th at the Blue Fox in the Winchester, Virginia. And the 21st is at Morgantown, Virginia, at the main stage. 23rd is the Machine Shop in Flint, Michigan, one of our favorites. 24th at the Forge in Joliet, Illinois, just outside of Chicago. 25th at the Foo Bar in St. Louis. And then three festivals in Texas, the 26th, Rocklahoma. Well, not in Texas, but prior Oklahoma, pretty close. 27th, River City Rock Fest in San Antonio. And the 28th, we will be in Dallas at BFD. So all those tickets available at FozzyRock.com. Plus, we'll be at the Download Festival on the main stage with Aerosmith in Nottingham, England, Donington, England, June 11th. I'll be hosting the Metal Hammer Golden God Awards on June 12th in London at the Indigo. On the 13th, we're at the Crawford Arms in Milton Keynes. That gig is almost sold out. There's still a few tickets left, and there might be a possible super secret gig somewhere else in England on the 14th. There is. You know where it is. I can't say it officially, but if you heard about it, it's true. That's all you need to know about the Fozzy Judas Rising Tour. For all further information, please go to FozzyRock.com. Get your tickets, get your VIP meet and greet tickets to all the shows, and come rock with us. It is going to be amazing. And the new single will be out very, very soon, within the next couple weeks. It's going to blow your heads off. I think someone in the know, someone I trust a lot, who's actually a Talk Is Jericho alumni, said it is the best Fozzy song he's ever heard. And I believe him for that, because he doesn't compliment me much. So, all right, Rico Constantino is coming up next.
Talk Is Jericho.
All right, so we are here in Las Vegas at the home of Rico Constantino. And, dude, I haven't seen you in a long time. And it's funny to me, because I think out of all the people that I've met in the wrestling business, you are like the Forrest Gump of wrestling. Because you did it all, man. You've had so many crazy experiences, and I want to talk about all of them. But the first one is, I walk in, your granddaughter's here, and you said you delivered your own granddaughter?
Yeah, which is when I first started in police business, right after I retired.
Right.
It was 2006, and my daughter was having trouble, so they were going to take the baby.
Right.
C-section, and she said that she wanted nobody in the room but me, and I was just in the middle of getting promoted to patrol officer instead of air.
Because you're a Las Vegas police officer.
Right.
Right.
And I called my sergeant and I said, listen, can I take my lunch break? And he goes, why? I said, I've got to go deliver my granddaughter. He said, well, why don't you just go home?
I said, take the afternoon.
I said, well, let me just use my lunch. It's a C-section. I'm going right up to Spring Valley and they're waiting for me.
Right.
I said, and if it goes a little longer, I'll give you a call and then I'll take the rest of the day off. He says, all right. So I go racing up there, and she's all prepped, and they bring me in the doctor's room, and they take off my shirt, I take off my belt, lock it up, and then they give me the hat and the scrubs and all that other stuff. I come out, and I got my little camera. They cut her open. I'm taking pictures. I cut the cord. I hold the baby, 10 fingers, 10 toes, wash her off a little bit, hand her to the nurse, hand her my daughter. Get dressed, put it back on, get back out, get back in my car, and I go, 10-8, David 7, Grandpa. And that was all within an hour.
So what did you do on your lunch break? Oh, I delivered my granddaughter.
I delivered my granddaughter. And that was, she was born July, let's see, because it was right at like 426 on July 28th, 2006.
Nice.
So that's an interesting story.
But you mentioned, like, after you retired, but you started in the business very late, because most kids, like, I started when I was 19, you start in your early 20s. But from what I recall in this, you correct me, I know you know, did you start when you were, like, almost 40, or were you 40, or late
30s? I was 38 and a half.
38 and a half.
Yeah, I was bodyguarding and been around the world twice. I was executive protection, worked with Secret Service, Department of Justice. I've met four different presidents.
You're kidding me.
No.
Which presidents?
My gosh. President Chamorro, which was the president of Nicaragua.
Okay.
Female. There was one president of Guyana, of Africa, West Africa. I can't remember his name. Mm-hmm. President Chiluba of Zambia. Met him twice. And then I met Yitzhak Rabin, which was the prime minister of Israel. And
what, where are you meeting these people? Who were you working for?
Well, I was working for a high-class diplomat.
Oh, okay.
And I was going to see him a third time, but somebody decided to assassinate him in 1998.
Assassinate?
Yitzhak Rabin.
Wow.
He was the Israeli prime minister. Yeah. So, and then I got to meet Daniel Ortega. He was the Sandinista leader down in Nicaragua. Got to go in his war room, and wow, let me tell you, that's a dark place.
Really?
Yeah.
Because Nicaragua, I mean, that's, like you said, dude, that's some serious shit.
Yeah. Yeah, he had pictures of Stalin and all the communist leaders in a big oval room, and you're like...
Wow, so you're there with your client.
Client.
And your job is to make sure that the client does not get harmed.
Yeah, my job is to make sure the client comes home the same way he left.
Right.
At my own expense.
That, yeah, you have, if you have to take the bullet, you'll do that. How did you get involved with that, Rico? I mean, that's some crazy stuff.
Well, you heard of Blackwater and all that other stuff. Now it's a big conglomerate and everything. Now, by then, when I was doing it, it was word of mouth. And the funny thing with this client, I was with a group called the Power Team and doing...
It was like a Christian muscle group. I remember watching that. Like, they're all musclehead guys, and they would bend bars for Jesus, basically. Yeah,
break bricks and stuff like that. I could tear a phone book and...
You were on the Power Team?
Yeah.
No shit.
2 years.
I used to watch that on TV.
Yeah, that's where I was. I had this great mullet, and... In fact, it was so good, I called it a moulet.
Of course.
I did that right after Gladiators. In fact, 1990, I won the Gladiators.
Oh, you actually won the Gladiators?
I won the American Gladiators. I was like us.
Wow.
And I went out for the show, and I was one of 12,000. They did a
mass casting call.
Four-city tour, and I did my tryout in Universal Studios. And the tryout for the show was really tough. You had to do 25 pull-ups in 30 seconds, pass or fail. Mm-hmm. And then you had to do a 40-yard dash in under such a time, pass or fail. Then you had to do a tug-of-war with somebody they picked, and 2 out of 3, pass or fail. Hmm. Then you had to do a 5-line shuttle run. You know, touch the line, go back, touch the line, go back. That wasn't really pass or fail, but they wanted to see how fast you could go. And then... you had to do Powerball twice on defense, stop the guy, and twice on offense.
That's like trying to run down the court, basically. Dunk the ball. Yeah, I remember that one.
There's three gladiators in the center.
Right.
And two contenders trying to dunk the ball at the same time. Well, you had to go twice offense, twice defense, and then an on-camera interview. And then they picked 20 men and 20 women. So after I got finished... plus, I was wearing extravagant tights.
Always very flamboyant.
Yes, I was flamboyant before I hit the WWE.
Right.
I mean, they were yellow, bright yellow with tiger stripes.
Right.
Tank top to match. And Inside Edition was there. So they were following me around. And the producer of the show, named Eitan Keller, after I finished everything, he asked me to... go to the gladiator side and try out to be a gladiator, because they were getting rid of two gladiators.
So you were just trying out to be a contestant on the show at first.
I was just trying to be a contestant.
Right.
So Eitan came to me to be a gladiator. I said, all right. So I did their little thing. because they got rid of two gladiators from the pilot season because now they were getting picked up by Warner Brothers and Four Point. They got rid of a guy named Titan and Malibu. So they were going to replace two gladiators. So as time went on, they replaced them with two humongous guys. One guy was 260 pounds named Turbo, and the other one was bigger than him named Thunder, who was 275. So I was like, well, I ain't going to beat that, so I'll be the contender. So we go, and we get to practice 2 days there, and we got with no gladiators and got to try the wall, got to try the lady and the tiger, you know, the reverse ramp you ran up.
Right.
And then the hand bike.
Yeah.
And then you ran across the beam and they threw the punching bag at you, climbed the cargo net, slid down the slide. Then you went, did the two jumps, and then you went through the paper. Mm-hmm. That's called Lady and the Tiger.
Right.
Three gladiators, four doors, and then that's the end of the time. So as we're practicing, I'm figuring stuff out. I'm figuring how to do the wall. I'm figuring how to do the giant gerbil ball, you know, Atlasphere. And I'm figuring out how to run up the thing and how to do the bike.
Right.
And I'm telling the other contenders, hey, do this. Stand up, roll this, and do this and do that. Well, at the end of the second day, one half of the stands is full of all the people. I guess their names are on the credits, executive producers and all these people. And then I'm doing the hang tough, the swinging thing. And all of a sudden I get a whistle on the loudspeaker. Eitan Keller goes, Rico, could you come here? Okay. So I walk over and he goes, do you know the concept of American gladiators? I said, yeah, it's me and this other guy against these big guys to get points. And the more points you get, you move on to the next round. It's a round robin tournament. He goes, okay, why are you telling these other contenders
right,
the secrets that you're learning as you're practicing? I said, well, ever since I saw your show, you're trying to find out who is the best. You have deemed these five people, these gladiators, are the best of the best. I'm here with my measuring stick to say I'm the best. So when I win your show, nobody's going to have an excuse. Boom.
Wow.
So when I win, nobody has an excuse. They know what I know.
Right.
And the producer turned around to all of them and said, see, I told you. Rico, go ahead and go back. And I ended up winning.
Nice.
Which was fun.
Right. And so they brought you on to be an actual gladiator after that?
No.
Okay.
That was what I was told. Mm. If I win, I could be a gladiator. Well, the creator and I did not get along.
Mm-hmm.
And he reneged on that promise.
Okay.
And I went, oh, okay. So I got myself a championship belt. And for the next year, because I won 10 grand and a trip to Hawaii. So for that next year, I worked with 10 different children charities weekly, and I donated my time. Adam Walsh, Special Olympics, Make-A-Wish, the Orange County Burn Unit, cerebral palsy, muscular dystrophy, anyone who would ask, I'd go. And then gladiators caught wind that I was doing all these appearances because right. It was appearing in the paper.
Yeah.
So I got a call from the lawyers, and they said, we need to have a talk. We need 10% of whatever you've made on these appearances.
Wow, because you're saying you're a gladiator.
Well, said I was gladiator champion.
Champion, right.
Yeah. I said, oh, okay. We need those figures sent to us, and we need a check sent to us as soon as possible. I said, well, I can do that right now. I said, because I got paid nothing for these appearances. I donated my time. So if you want 10% of nothing, I think that's nothing. So
I can write you a check right now.
Yeah. So you get nothing.
Right.
And all I did was tell these charities, feed me.
Mm-hmm.
That's
mm-hmm.
it. Mm-hmm. Feed me. And then we'll have a blast.
Right.
And my favorite event was the Special Olympics track and field. And I used to have such a blast at that. Let me know how much.
It's okay. No, you're good.
And I remember we were in Santa Ana, California, and this one young man wanted my championship belt. He actually wanted it. And I said, I'll tell you what. We'll do the track and field today, and at the end of the day, I'll have a race with you, and you get to wear it for an hour. And he lit up, you know. And he went and told everybody he was going to race me for my belt. Well, at the end of everything, everybody got their hugs and their medals. This football field was lined up with everybody. So I was like, oh, my gosh. And it's a 100-yard dash.
Right.
So I get the sponsors into it and stuff like that. And the starter gun goes off. And then he takes off. And then I get ahead of him. And then he gets ahead of me. And then I get ahead of him. And all the kids are going crazy. And he gets ahead of me. And then I get ahead of him. And we're coming up at the end. And he wins by a neck.
Yeah.
And he was just so happy. I mean, he had the belt. He ran around, showed his friends. The Orange County Register made front page.
Mm-hmm.
Got a big color picture of me raising his hand.
Yeah, yeah.
Him holding the belt. I mean, those are
moment, yeah.
Priceless moments.
Priceless moment.
And he ran around for an hour at least and had the belt was sharing it with his friends.
That's cool.
Yeah. It's just stuff like that to just pop in my head and of just other stuff I've done. And
let's talk a bit about, I know you mentioned being a high-class bodyguard. You actually worked for years with Benny Hinn.
Yeah.
Who is one of the most famous televangelists probably of all time. He's right up there with, you know, Jimmy Swaggart and all those type of guys.
Yeah.
So what exactly was your job with Benny?
Well, I was with the Christian team, power team, and I didn't even know who Benny Hinn was. The closest I knew Benny Hinn was Benny Hill.
Right.
You know, and the little bald guy getting hit in the head.
Right.
So I'm in Alaska. I'm in Anchorage doing the week with
the power team.
Power team. And the phone rings at 4:30 in the morning. Now, I have been remarried. Linda and I have been divorced.
Mm-hmm.
So I answer the phone and I hear, hello. I said, hello. This is Pastor Hinn calling. I said, okay, and why are we calling? I want to talk to you. I said, do you know what time it is? It's 7:30. I said, where are you? Orlando, Florida. I said, it's 4:30 in the morning here. You want to give me a few minutes? call me back in a couple of minutes.
Right.
So...
And this is before cell phones. You're actually calling at your hotel room.
How I got my hotel room, I don't know.
Yeah.
So I wash my face off, and he calls back. And I'm on the phone. And he starts telling me that he is getting death threats and letters of, you know, threatening his life, his family's life, and stuff like that. And me having my prior bodyguard background, police background, because I was a police officer at 23 here in North Las Vegas. Yeah. Graduated number one in police academy up north and all that stuff. Decorated. I just left. I didn't like the new chief, and I was young enough. I went,
I'll go to Vegas. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll go do something else. I'm out of here. So he's telling me all these problems, and he wants me to get on a plane that day and come see him. And I said, well, I can't. Right now I'm under contract with Mr. Jacobs.
The power team.
Yeah, and I'm in the middle of a show. I can't just leave him high and dry. I don't do business that way. Well, when do you get back? And I said, well, I get back on Tuesday. He goes, then why don't you send your wife and I'll show her this and that. And I said, well, didn't you just tell me all the life threats you've had and death threats and this and that? Well, yes. Then why would I send my most prized possession to you now without me there?
Right.
He says, good point. I said, okay. Now I'll be back on Tuesday.
Yeah.
Give me a ticket for Wednesday and we'll come and I'll come and see your position and see everything. So sure enough, he had me a ticket Wednesday. My wife at that time and I went down to Florida. He picked me up himself at the airport. Went down. At that time, he was doing his television show on church property, Orlando Christian Center. So he showed me, saw some notes, took a tour. He has uniformed guards on the property. He does about 7,500 to 10,000 people a Sunday. And he has California Highway Patrol get people in and out of the lots. I mean, there's 2,500 people to service. So I'm watching, and then he tells me, you know, just for the bodyguard, just to be the bodyguard and take care of him, take care of him personally. I said, okay, this is my price. So he marches me into his financial officer, and I sit down, and he don't look too happy. So he says, so you think Pastor needs a bodyguard? I said, no. He goes, okay, what are you doing here? I said, Pastor thinks he needs a bodyguard.
Right.
He called me. I didn't call him. And what is your price? I said, this is my price. He goes, this is a church organization. I said, I'm sorry. I'm a bodyguard. This is my price. No. I said, thank you very much. I stood up, walked out of the green room, and I said, Pastor, can I have a ride back to the airport? Well, what happened? Mr. So-and-so does not want to pay my price, and I need to get back to Texas and get ready for the next week. He says, could you stay here for a few minutes? Sure. So I stay here. He leaves. 5-7 minutes, he comes back. Could you come with me? Sure. Walks me right back into the financial officer's office. Sit down. And this guy, you can see him coming from his
ears. Steam, yeah.
Yeah. And he says, I'll leave you two to talk. He walks away. He looks at me, he goes, so this is your price? I said, yeah, this is my price. He says, all right. I said, okay, I need to give 2 weeks to my prior employer. It's a proper thing to do. And you need to move me here to Orlando. Mm-hmm. I said, I'll go to an apartment first, but I need a home and somewhere close to where Pastor lives. Okay. So he does all that, and I give my 2 weeks to John, but he wasn't too thrilled. So I had a week extra to relax. And then I worked 2 years with Pastor.
So, and Benny Hinn's thing was he would heal sick people. That was his gimmick, right?
Well, if you ask him, and I've been there. I've been to a lot of crusades around the world. We were gone 3 weeks in the United States, 1 week overseas. And he would tell you he never healed anybody.
He never healed anybody.
God healed.
Right.
He would be in it's called a crusade where he goes, but he'd be in the prayer meeting, singing, worshiping, having everybody pray. And people would be checked out prior to going up. And before they hit the television, their doctors were checked out to see if they had an illness. So his background crew did so much work to prove that a person had an illness, and an illness is not there no more. So he had 100 people behind the scenes to verify that this was a miracle and not just somebody trying to get minutes of fame.
And you saw this happen? You saw examples of this?
I saw one thing in Africa. Now, I'm sitting at the stage, and I'm looking out, and I'm watching Pastor's eyes because he goes from one side to another, praying for people. And I'm watching people as they come up. And I saw, we were in a soccer stadium. They were passing somebody draped in white linen. From all the way in the back, they were passing this person over their head.
Like passing them like by their hands, like a crowd surfing. Yeah.
Was wrapped. Totally wrapped. Head to toe, wrapped in white. And I'm watching this. And and then they got to the stage, and they threw, and boom, the thing hit, whatever it was, hit the stage. And I'm watching it, it's not moving. Not moving at all. Pastor goes over and prays on it. And it moves to the next. Next thing you know, it gets up and walks away. Just gets up and walks away.
What was it, a body or something?
It was a body. You could tell it was a body. It looked like a mummy. It was wrapped all in white.
Like a dead body.
Well, I couldn't tell it was dead. Now, right. I can't say it was dead because I didn't check any vitals. It hit the corner of the stage. There was no one near Pastor. No reason for me to get up. Now, if it had got up and rushed Pastor,
yeah,
then it would have been something different.
Right.
You know, I'm trying. I don't want to interfere with what's going on. I had my eye on it. He prayed and then went this way, that way. It got up and walked away. The guy in Africa, I think it was Ndola, or no, Lusaka. It was Lusaka, said that that person was shrouded in a death shroud and was passed all the way up, got up, and left the stage.
Wow.
That's what he tells us.
Right, sure.
And who am I to say anything? I didn't check any vitals mm-hmm. or nothing like that. In Puerto Rico, we were there. People were coming up getting prayed for. I'm on this side of the stage with all the pastors. I see a guy coming up, and I see a gun under his shirt. And I'm like, oh, no, you don't. So I get up and I run all the way around the stage, and I don't catch the people when they fall. When they fall, he has catchers. But, you know, when he touches them, they fall
they pass out or whatever.
Right. So all of a sudden, he's going back and forth, and then I take the catcher and pull a catcher. Now I'm behind this big-ass guy. And the catcher just, he comes over, he walks over, he looks at me, and I look at him and go like that, and he goes, touch! And the guy goes, and then I got the gun as he falls.
So he touched him in the head and made him
he fell
out.
Back,
yeah.
But then I get a .45 off this
right,
guy.
Right.
The police come, he's got a permit, it ended up being innocent, but
still,
he had a gun. See,
wow.
Stuff like that. So, but I've read the notes.
Stuff you can't explain.
No.
Right.
Can't explain. A lady, you know, started walking, got off a cane, and this was in Ndola. People were going crazy. Tried to get them, tore the whole stage apart. I had to get them out. You know, we were using the presidential bodyguards.
Mm-hmm.
And we were driving a Mercedes. And the presidential guy was, and I wasn't allowed to carry guns overseas, but I knew where his was. And if you hit one lock on a Mercedes, all of them lock. So
wow,
they had Pastor out, had him out by the jacket, and I had to come from a car behind.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that guy's still around.
Right.
He got a right cross, and I threw Pastor in, locked the door, reached around, got this guy's gun, and told him go.
Mm.
It's just stuff like that.
Yeah.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
This is Talk is Jericho.
So how does all this stuff lead you to eventually get into the wrestling business at 38 years old?
Oh, my God. Okay, I do Benny, and then time's up. Time's up. You know, you just feel it.
It's time to move on.
Well, it's time to move on, you know. Not only was I Benny's personal bodyguard, but he made me in charge of his guards on the ground. So now I'm chief of his security. And then when he has his Sunday service, I'm in charge of the CAT team, counter assault team. So now I'm wearing three hats for the same price as one.
Right.
And I figured, okay, it's a church, I'll do this and I'll do that. And I just gotten surgery right here, and some guy went nuts. I mean, he was coming down yelling at Benny, and I'd sit right, like say you're up front,
yep,
and the aisle's here, and there the chairs there. I would sit front corner here,
mm-hmm.
and I would just stare at Benny the whole service, because he's got. Why would I turn around?
Right,
he sees everything, and if his eyes go cuckoo, I know which way to look.
Mm-hmm.
Well, his eyes went that way, and some guy was coming to get him and was throwing people in wheelchair out of the way, yelling at Benny. Well, I had to go get him, and I got him, but he punched me right where I got surgery. It's like, can you throw a little healing over here?
Can you heal me?
Yeah. But so time was done with Benny, and I opened my own private investigating business. over there, and I got a job with a gentleman named Dart. Now, if you turn over any styrofoam cup, it'll say Dart with a circle on it.
Underneath the cup.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think they own like 75% of the world's styrofoam. So I didn't want to be in charge no more. I just wanted to be a flunky, you know, run a command post. Just be, you know, laid low. So I'd work 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off. So the 2 weeks I worked on, I worked the midnight shift. You know, we had a post in Cayman, Sarasota. That's where I was stationed. And Oxford, London. And, you know, watching, communicating. So I was keeping an eye on, well, me and the other team were three daughters and a wife.
Mm-hmm.
You know, each daughter had her own bodyguard that took them to school.
Right.
Waited, brought them home. The wife had her own little bodyguard. I stayed on the property. And once in a while, I'd go to Cayman, you know. And then, one time I even infiltrated Oxford.
How? Yeah.
Because the daughter was going out with a guy who was going to Oxford.
Oxford, the university?
Yeah.
Yeah.
In London.
Yeah.
Well, I had to go there and keep an eye on her. So I was I could say, I went to Oxford.
So how does that lead you to wrestling, though?
Oh, well, so I go do this and do the private investigating. So the 2 weeks I'm off, I'm subcontracted by Allstate and State Farm, and I film the guys that go, my neck hurts, I do this, and I film them all, and they're all lying.
Right.
So my brother has a bail bonds company here, and he finally convinces me to come down here and help, take a cut and pay, but he's family.
Right.
He's great at the bail bonds business, doesn't know how to manage people. People were stealing from him, taking advantage. So I said, okay, I'll come here. So I come here, general manage the place, and he's doing a wrestling thing in California. Jesse Hernandez,
mm-hmm.
Empire Wrestling Federation. Right, right. Well, I've always wanted to, you know, wrestle, but I figure I'm 38 and a half. What am I going to do? You know, 38. I'll just go play a while. You know, live out a little dream.
Yeah, yeah.
I use my gladiator stuff. You know,
power team. It's all kind of the similar vibe. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah, yeah. So we would go there 3 hours, you know, and 3 hours there after work.
Right.
In San Bernardino, you know, work out for 3 hours and drive 3 hours back. So we were doing that. And then Jesse says, you know, why don't you start wrestling? You know, I said, okay. So I was there 12 months, had 8 matches. And then Jesse sent up a tape to WWE. I think he meant to set up Frankie Kazarian's tape. But mine went up. So I'm at the office and Howard Finkel calls and says, is Rico there? Yeah. This is Howard Finkel. We want you to come up to Connecticut and try out. Yeah, of course I will. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So when I went up there, it was Nicole Bass, Mark Henry, and a bunch of new guys.
Yeah.
So it's Dory Funk's last dojo. So I go there and we meet Dory and his wife in the morning. So I'm like fourth or fifth, and Dory says, hello, what's your name? How old are you? How long have you been wrestling? Ending goes from there. So he's asking these people, he comes up to me, hi, what's your name? Rico Costino. How old are you? 38. How long you been wrestling? I said, a year. They both stood up and walked away. That was the end of my interview. Right there.
Right.
They're saying, this guy's done something to get here. He's he's greased some palms.
Right.
So I just kept going with what I did.
Mm-hmm.
Ended up getting food poisoning
mm-hmm.
from the cafeteria. But I wasn't going to quit or stay in the room. So I was doing the exercises, run into the bathroom.
Right, right. Come back, work out.
Come back, work out. And then after a while, you know, Dory says, Rico's the only one that's able to suplex Nicole or do this to Nicole or body slam Nicole. Rico's the only one. Okay. Mm-hmm. So we do our matches. Cornette's there with Henry. We do the 10 days. Our last 2 days is going to Killer Kowalski's and do a couple of Army Guard bases.
Yeah, spot shows. Yeah,
yeah, spot shows. So I do my first day, and first day is with Mark Henry, and Jimmy's got the racket. And he says, I'm going to lay it in. I said, do what you got to do. And he laid it in. So, you know, I lost there. And the next day was tag matches. And then Dr. Tom Pritchard said, you did good, kid. You know, they're probably going to give you an offer to do, you know, camp. I said, okay. So all of a sudden I started hearing Jimmy yell, what the F? What do you mean? Where is that SOB? Where is he? Rico, where are you? And I'm like, uh-oh, did I do something wrong? I think I'm going to get in trouble.
Right.
You know, because Jimmy.
Yeah, he loses his temper like
exactly.
That.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I finally go find him. I said, what's wrong? He goes, do you know what they just told me? I said, no, tell me. He goes, how old are you? And I said, 38. What the hell are you talking about? I thought you were 24. And I went... said, no, I told him I was 38. It's on my app.
Right.
He says, God. And he, yeah. Then I went, man. I said, no, I'm 38. And so he goes away and he's talking to Dr. Tom. And then he comes back and he says, listen, I'm going to go down to OVW July. Be ready. And I said, well, what do they start out at? He says, $500. And I went,
a week, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And I said, you know, I got a family to support.
Yeah.
And then he goes, well, it's $10.99. I went, oh, no. So I went, all right, let me think about it. And, you know, we'll stay in touch. So when I got back here, Yoko was here. And I called Yoko and I said, can we talk? And Yoko and I met. And Yoko said, he says, bro, he says, so many guys would give their left arm and their leg to get what you got. He says, if I was you, I'd go for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, okay, Yoko, I will. And then that's it.
That
and
was it?
Yeah, and then July, kissed my wife and drove to Louisville. And that's how I got started.
When did you get called up to the main roster? Was that a three-minute warning?
No, when I got, they were going to cut me.
Mm-hmm.
They were going to cut me, and Jim Cornette, JR, and Steve, and Stone Cold.
Really?
Told them, give me a chance.
Why was Austin a fan of yours?
There was this big guy named Russ McCullough was supposed to do something with him at right. Louisville Gardens.
Gotcha.
Well, he turned him, he was a heel. He turned himself babyface in Huntington, West Virginia.
Uh-huh.
And Jim went nuts on him. And he says, you're out, Rico's in. So nothing planned. No
so you worked with Steve Austin.
Yeah, yeah, and he stunned me.
Right.
And he liked me. And so he gave me the thumbs up along with... JR was giving me the thumbs up in all the wrestling reports
yeah.
about developmentals. And Cornette said, give the guy 90 days.
Mm-hmm.
I said, they said, he's done everything... we've asked of him. He's been a baby face. He got his leg torn. You know, he came back. We told him to go heel. He went heel. He does everything. You know, he does the ring. He stays. He says, and if you don't like, you ain't got a gimmick for him in 90 days.
Right.
Send him home. But just give him a chance.
Mm-hmm.
So all of a sudden, I'm sitting there. One day I'm a heel. One day I'm this. And then Raven comes up to me. He says, what do you like being, a heel or a face? I said, well, being a heel is easy. He said, you got to do something about your face. I said, what, light it on fire? Do what? I said, this is my face. He goes, grow some sideburns.
That's right, the sideburns.
I said, well, what kind of sideburns? He goes, like Honky Tonk Man, like Elvis. I said, well, that's already been done. He goes, well, you got to do something. You're too much of a pretty boy. You're not going to pass as a heel. So I started thinking, and I said, well, Rock had those corporate sideburns.
Yeah.
Tonk had the Elvis thing. Let me grow something completely ugly. that and try to put them over myself, which makes people mad.
Yeah.
So I grew those big old mutton chops.
Giant mutton chops.
Exactly. And started trying to put them over.
Yeah.
And to this day, if you ask Scott, I didn't tell him to do that. He'll deny it. He says, I didn't say that. But he's the reason for the chops.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm warming up. I think I'm going to wrestle Stevie Richards, who I think he got out of Right to Censor.
Right.
And then he got out of the where he wore black on black. And I was going to wrestle. And then there's Jazz speaking to Stephanie. And they're looking at me and they're giggling. No, I don't have a fly.
Right.
So I'm looking around and they're giggling. So I said, okay, I'm not going to go up to Stephanie and ask her. So I walk up to Jazz there. I said, wait, what are you two ladies giggling about? Oh, nothing. I said, come on, Jazz.
Right.
She goes, how would you feel about dyeing your hair completely blonde? I said, I'll dye it blonde. She says, oh, okay. And then I had the next week off, and I'm sitting, and I get the phone call. Get up to Ottawa now.
What? Ottawa.
Yeah, get up to Ottawa. Okay. Get to Ottawa. There I am, Billy and Chuck's manager.
Ah.
And I'm like, excuse me, come here, road agent. I said, I don't know how to manage. I've never managed.
Right.
So they called Billy over, and I said, Billy, I don't know how to manage. He says, follow my lead. We'll get it done. And I said, what am I supposed to do? He goes, you spin kick the shit out of Hardy. And I said, okay.
Right.
So, and oh my God, people must love the Hardys in Ottawa. Because when I left, I got snowballed. I mean, they were snowballing me left and right. And then that's where.
And that's when Billy and Chuck were doing like the gay thing, like the gay marriage and all that stuff.
Well, no. That came later.
Later, okay.
What happened was Billy wanted to go out on his own.
Mm-hmm.
And this is when Taker was gone.
Right.
Taker was recovering, so he didn't want to tag anymore. So he wanted to go out on his own. So when the wedding thing came up, there was like three endings to it.
Mm-hmm.
And
this is Billy and Chuck's wedding.
Right.
Right.
Right. So, you know, I've never done a monologue.
Yeah.
So they gave me a 5-page monologue, and I had to hit every cue to get people to come out, like The Godfather,
right.
This. I mean, I was sweating.
All the people that were coming up for the wedding.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was sweating, going all the marks, and I was just like, oh, my God, I hope I hit this, because if I don't, I'm dead.
Right.
You know, and it ended up turning out great.
Mm-hmm.
So good that, you know, we went to Raw. I mean, Billy and Chuck beat the snot out of me, and then 3-minute warning came out. And then Samoa, Stephanie.
So then you went to 3-minute warning.
And then I went to Raw.
Okay.
And it was 3-minute warning.
Gotcha.
And then Jamal got in some trouble with the law down in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
So then it was going to be 2-minute warning.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And then they said, well, you can't have 2-minute warning. We've already established. 3-minute warning. So they were going to give Jamal a break for a while. So they put Rosie with Hurricane.
Yeah.
He became superhero in training.
Yeah.
And then Hunter approached me and said, Vince wants you to do this character, an Adrian Street character.
Ah.
And I said, well, is Adrian still alive? Yeah. I said, well, how does he feel about it? He says, well, I don't know. I said, well, that's going to be kind of, I feel kind of weird plagiarizing his character without his permission. I said, if I'm going to do his character, one, he was from the 70s. Two, I got to take what he did and put it in the millennium. I said, fly me down to meet him. They said, all right. They flew me down to Gulf Breeze. I met Adrian and his wife, Linda, and we talked for like 14 hours.
Wow.
And I asked him what made it work for him then. He told me. I said, I want to bring it here. I want to bring it up here, you know, for the crowds now. Evidently, I can't go stepping on girls.
Yeah, it's 30 years later.
Yeah. I said, you know, I'm thinking of, you know, a pretty girl, but still do some of your antics along with my antics, you know, and this. And we talked it over and came up with, you know, don't ever tell him, he says. Don't ever Tell him. That's where Dino Bravo messed up.
Don't ever tell him.
Of what you are.
Oh, gotcha.
Don't ever
come out and tell the audience that I'm this gay or straight or homosexual or whatever, right?
Right. Mm. Leave them guessing to their own. And that's where Dino Bravo messed up. He just came out and said, I am. And then that was it for that character.
Mm.
That was it.
So if you leave it up to the imagination of the audience.
Yeah. And
that's a good point, right?
And that's where, and then they said, I told them I need an arm piece. I need a beautiful arm piece. And that's how this is going to go over. Well, they were going to give me Daphne from ECW. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, what's she look like? They showed me. I said, well, she's a pretty girl. I said, but she's not what this character needs. She needs a blonde girl, stacked.
Barbie doll, yeah.
Yeah, stacked. And then she helps me win by throwing me hairspray, lipstick, doting on me, giving me the nose kiss, doting on me.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then all of a sudden, I'm doing all the ride 'em cowboy, smack 'em in the butt, jump in the arms, but then when it's push come to shove, I kick your ass.
Right.
So, what is he? Is he playing? Is he using? And I gave a lot of credit to Taz, and all the announcers because they were playing that angle.
Right.
He's messing with your mind. He's doing all that to get you off your game.
Right, right, right.
And then, they said, well, you get Daphne. I said, it ain't going to work. I need somebody else. Well, who do you need? I said, Jackie Gata. Oh, no, she's going back down to OVW. And that's when Jackie had that match on Raw.
Oh, yeah,
that
really bad one with JBL and Trish. Yeah.
Yeah. They were going to zip.
Uh-huh.
And I talked to Stephanie again because that's who thought of this character. And I said, Steph, I really need her to make this work. She said, well, she'll never wrestle. I said,
you don't need her to.
I don't want her to wrestle.
Right.
I want her just to be the arm piece to keep the people on their toes.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, that's it. I said, that's all I need. And I said, the character will go over. She'll dote on me, take my this, put the lipstick or chapstick on me.
Because you had the full-blown butterfly makeup on.
I did, yeah. Until Booker got upset.
Oh, he got upset at what?
The makeup.
Why was he upset at the makeup?
Because Chanel is his girlfriend?
Charmel.
Charmel.
Yeah.
Charmel was accusing him of going into strip joints because that stuff won't come out of his hair. So he
went. You were working with him. Gotcha.
So he talked to Vince, and Vince asked me to tone it down.
Gotcha.
So that's when I went just to the lines,
yeah.
Not the full Adrian
right.
Street makeup, which was less work for me. And okay, hey, I don't want to get your trouble, home Booker.
Yeah, I gotcha.
I can work with it.
Right.
It's great. So I had different designs, makeup matched the dice. And for Adrian letting me plagiarize his character, he had a wrestling outfit company that made tights and stuff. I got all my tights for him from a year.
Gotcha.
I said, thank you, and I'm going to buy all my tights for a year.
So you're really playing a character here. Then that's what the secret to wrestling is playing a character. And you're
right.
Playing basically a gay man as a totally straight guy.
Right.
So to play that part, to really get into it, you did a great job with it. You're acting.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I was. And, all the funny stuff I did in the stage, the cowboy riding and that. I used to get a lot of my ideas from the fans.
Hmm.
I'd go out, sign a few autographs, and there's always one, two, or three of them to go, hey, Rico, you know what would be really funny?
You're writing it down.
I'd write it down, and then when I would sit in the tanning bed, I'd go, okay, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, where could this fit? Where could that fit? And most of them, I could put it. And when I couldn't put it, the step over kick, mm-hmm. the mule kick, mm-hmm. Finley taught me where to put it.
Right.
When we wrestled.
I remember it was Sacramento or something. Was it me and Trish?
It was you, Trish, me and Jackie.
Ah, mixed tag match. I remember that.
Trish and Jackie did a bra and panties the week before. And they wanted me, I was at ringside.
Right.
And this is when the writers said they wanted me to come down in a boosty.
Of course.
And this. And I went, okay, so we're killing my character, right?
Right.
Do you have something else for me? No, this will be funny. No, you're going to kill the Rico character.
And why would that kill the character?
Because I'm doing what Goldust did.
Right.
Yet now you've just shown that I am a closet homosexual.
Right.
Okay. I said, that's not funny.
And it was always ambiguous up until then.
Yeah. You don't know what's under my tights.
It's right.
Like, I said, that's not funny. You're going to kill it. And here we are in Salt Lake City. And they go, what are you going to do? I said, you know what you do? You get a pair of pants. You make me a pink thong with sparkles. Okay? I'm ripped. Now, I cannot have Trish just strip me down. I have to do something, get her miss. She capitalizes on my miss, where I'm in a predicament that I can't get out of.
Right.
And then she gets me. And there I am standing buck-ass naked, embarrassed at first, and then I turn it on. And then Jackie tries to kick Trish, kicks me in the nuts. Down I go. Trish strips Jackie,
yeah.
Wins the match. Now I got to cover Jackie because I can't have her butt out, but mine is way out on Thanksgiving, you
right,
know?
Right.
So I'm making it like this.
Yeah.
And I said, that will keep the character going.
Yeah, yeah.
So they listened to me there. So that's why we got to wrestle the next week.
Oh,
the intergender.
Oh.
That's why we.
Oh, yeah, the mixed tag. Gotcha.
Yeah, because they didn't kill me the week before.
Ah.
You know, and then we had the good match, and they were doing the thing, and, you know, and, you know, you got me with the drop kick off the thing, and then I did the kick, jump kick with that.
I remember.
And, yeah, so it was a good match.
Yeah.
It moved quick. The ladies got what they did, you know, and then I was strangling Trish.
Back in the days when you could actually put your hands on the women. You
yeah.
Can't do that
now. But you had the ref.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then
they said,
hey. You know,
yeah, right.
And then you came in, and then we double suplexed Trish.
Right.
And then you got out, but we gave her enough time to get her marbles. And one, two, doom! And then she went like that, and the people
kicked out. Yeah.
Oh, wait, great. I thought it was a great match.
Yeah,
I saw
yeah.
It on Daily Motion, maybe 8-9 months ago.
Oh, okay.
They played it, and I was like, "That's a heck of a." Because what I did is I pushed Trish first.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
So when you did that character, did you go back to managing afterwards, or were you just
no? I what happened was. Okay, well, let's go back. I have to go back to when I quit 3-Minute Warning.
Right.
Okay, I quit because of all that stuff. And then that's when H approached me to do the Adrian Street. And they said, okay, get ready. We're going to bring you out in a couple of weeks. So I came out on Heat, and I wrestled Noble.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it got kind of over on Noble.
That character, yeah.
Yeah. So the next week, I was going to wrestle Charlie Haas on SmackDown. So I wrestled Haas, and he was doing all the technical, and I was playing around. You know how technical he is. Well, he turned around, and I came up the other side of the ring. He turned around, and I grabbed him, and I kissed him.
Mm.
And he ran out of the ring, count to 10, and then I win. Right? So we go back to Canada, and Scotty and Rikishi were tag champions. Well, Pat Patterson comes up and goes, man, you guys would be the perfect champions, the perfect tag champions. And I said, well, what do you mean? He goes, it's great. He goes, you know, Charlie's scared of you, you know. And I said, well, don't forget, you've got four baby faces, you know, Jackie, me, Scotty.
Or Kishi.
Yeah, Kishi. And then you got Haas, who's hated. And so he sat and thought about it a while, and I said, well, this is how I think it'll work. We'll just make it a triangle.
Mm.
Charlie likes Jackie. Jackie likes me. I like Charlie. I said, we'll make it a triangle.
Right.
And I said, you know, we'll have them play the heel, but I'll do my fancy stuff to get us over. So you know how when you do the sunset flip on Rikishi, and he smacks his ass. Yeah, well, I did the sunset flip on him, and then I smacked his ass. And then he went and tagged Scotty in. And Charlie's having a fit. He's going, come on, quit playing around. Mm-hmm. And then I smacked his ass for a tag in. And then he was getting his ass beat by Rikishi. Jackie grabbed Kishi's ass. He turned around. Charlie rolled up Scotty, and we won. So now Charlie's all happy.
So now you and Charlie are the tag team champs.
We're the tag team champions now.
Yeah.
So he had to give me the belt. So, and how they did it is in the beginning, they said, Charlie's tag team partner, because he knew who his partner was. Mm. It was a mystery because Benjamin was on the other side.
Right.
Yeah. So Charlie's tag team partner. Well, when I came out, because I kissed him the week before, he's looking at the ref going, no, not him. No.
Anybody but him.
Yeah. So that's how. And then I got hurt in Chicago. Bubba Dudley threw me out of the ring and tore my hamstring. Mm. And then he suplexed me during the match where I was trying to get through it, tore it again.
Wow.
And then when he pinned me, he put his feet on the second turnbuckle and stretched my legs over my head and tore it a third time.
Eesh.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then I just said, you know, I ain't getting up. You're going to come get me.
Was that kind of the end of the line for you at that point?
No. I said, okay. And I worked 6 months, came back to the ring and did all that stuff. And then November 4th was the day I got released. Mm-hmm. That's when Vince said my character wasn't over no more.
Oh, okay.
So Japan was trying to get me there, just kept calling. I said, no, I'm under contract until February 2nd with Vince. And I said, I'm not going to dishonor that. And then the second came, Vince didn't call, took a flight to Japan. You guys were there.
Oh, wow.
You guys were there. And that night I won the tag team titles with Bull Buchanan. All Japan.
Was it All Japan? Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then I went to Hard Rock, and then Taker was there, and all the guys were there.
Hmm.
I said, hey.
I remember that. Yeah, the whole crew was there.
Everybody
was hanging out, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you like Japan?
I did, but then I started thinking, here I am, 44 years old.
Yeah.
And do I want to keep traveling to Japan and leaving the family alone, raising the granddaughter?
Yeah.
And
who you delivered.
Yeah.
Who you delivered, yeah.
Who I delivered. And I said, no, I'm going to go back to what I know.
Hmm.
You know, because I've been a jack of trades, master of none.
But that's the thing, though, that the fact that you actually made it to the WWE at pretty much 40 years old, that you could be one of the only guys to ever do that.
I think Steve Lombardi said that.
I think so.
He said that you I think he's come. There's an asterisk by Dallas Page.
Okay, but he had been wrestling in WCW prior.
Yeah, that's where I think the
asterisk. But to get to the big leagues of the WWE at 40 years old, basically your first big company, that could be the only guy. So that's a pretty big deal to be able to do that.
That's my only company.
Yeah.
I wrestled for an independent.
Right.
With 8 matches.
Uh-huh.
And then got signed with Vince.
Yeah.
Under F. And then it went to E and stayed with Vince. And then I only wrestled for Japan, I think I was in Japan total 17 days, wrestled maybe 10 total.
10 shows, yeah.
Yeah. And then I said, you know what? I'm going to go back to be a policeman. So by the time I came back, the police academy in Boulder City was opening up. I went to police academy in July, put in my application. September 26th, I was hired by the state. November, I was hired by the feds. And there I was.
Back to work, yeah.
Back to work.
Do you miss wrestling at all?
I miss the fans the most, and then I miss my friends.
Hmm.
I miss the guys.
The camaraderie?
Yeah. Of my friends, because we were family.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the guys who wanted to be family.
Right.
You know, the people who were mean, I could take them and leave them.
Right.
You know, just smile and go. But friends, you know, like you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we always talked and had fun. If I ever had a question, I could always come to you. Come to, you know, like that scene with that one thing with I don't want to mention his name, but
Yeah.
That scene where I needed help.
Right. Yeah, you got in trouble for whatever reason. Yeah, you needed some help. Yeah,
and I needed help and some advice. Taker was always there for me. I remember freaking him out.
How?
We were in Pesaro, Italy.
Uh-huh.
And we're sitting there at the hotel after the show, and I wanted to take a swim. But I didn't have any trunks. So I just stripped down to my underwear, and I just took a swim out to the jetty. I don't know how far it was, but I was out there, and I swam, and then looked around, and said, okay, swam back. Swam back to Taker waiting there by my clothes going, what are you doing? I said, I just wanted to take a swim. He goes, you are one crazy SOB. Get your clothes and let's go. I said, yes, sir. And we walked back in the...
But you always had that kind of unique vibe to you, I remember. You always, you know, to get the character over that you did and to do all the stuff that you've done, you have to be kind of a unique person, for
sure. Oh, yeah. And you got to be willing to, you know... Take it to the limit. And like I don't know if I just said this in an interview, but I asked Vince, you know, like when Chuck, Billy, and I did those characters, and Billy, I, and Chuck went to Vince and said, listen, we don't mind doing this as long as we don't offend that way of life.
Right. Sure.
We don't
respect it.
That.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he said, okay. And in WWE, we have the GLAAD Award. Mm-hmm. From the gay and lesbian people, they gave us an award.
Really?
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, and I thought that was very honorable.
An award for?
For not showing them in a bad light.
Gotcha.
And actually making people laugh.
Yeah.
You know? And I asked him with this Adrian Street character, how far you want me to go? He says, strap a rocket to your ass. And take off. I'll tell you when to back up.
Right.
And I said, okay. And I said, you're the man. Mm-hmm. And I did everything I did and turned myself babyface. He didn't like that too much because I was supposed to be heel. Right. I was on Raw.
Yeah.
And just all the funny stuff I did.
People immediately, because you're entertaining, so they start liking you.
Exactly. Right. And they start liking the cowboy and the stuff like that.
Sure, because it's entertaining. People love to be entertained, right?
Yeah, well, that's why I kept being semi-main event.
Right.
You know, it's not like I walked up to Vince and say, I need to be this. No.
Yeah.
This is where you put me.
Right.
Because everybody else wanted to be, you know, the Stone Cold, the tough guy.
Sure.
Well, how much tough guy matches can you see before you see the people who've earned the main event?
Yeah.
You know, you got to show respect for the people in the main event. People need to laugh, let some steam off, and that's where I came in. You know, that's why you didn't see me on roids. That's why you didn't see me, you know.
You didn't have to be.
No. I used my brain.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to make you laugh.
Right.
You know, you're going to get a giggle out of me.
I'm going to entertain you.
Yeah. Get your popcorn and come back and sit down quick. Because you look so good to me is going to show you why you're here. And by the time I got finished, you were ready for the main event. Mm-hmm. Whether it was JBL and Guerrero, whatever, the casket match, whatever. But you were ready to see the cage match. You were ready to get back into it.
After they saw you.
After they saw the fun. They had time to go and relax. You know, and that was my role.
Sure, of course.
Quite happy with my role.
Yeah, and you knew that. Which is why you were good at it.
Quite happy. Being a mid-card guy, quite happy.
Yeah.
And I always say this with every interview, and I am so thankful to the McMahons for even giving me a shot.
Mm-hmm.
Here you are giving a 38-year-old guy a shot to be part of the team, to be part of the family. You know, I can't thank him enough.
Yeah.
You know?
Like you said, at 38 years old, that's a pretty big pat on your back that you're able to do that.
Yeah. And I debuted on television at 40.
Yeah. Who can say that in this business?
I like I said, asterisk by Dallas Page.
Sure.
I don't know. But Lombardi said, I retired at 40. You're debuting.
You're starting.
Yeah, the Brooklyn Brawler.
So as we wind down here, two last questions. What was your favorite angle that you were part of, and what was your favorite match that you had?
Man, I never really got to get solid into an angle. I got moved around a lot,
yeah,
with Billy and Chuck. And
did you enjoy the Billy and Chuck thing?
Oh, I enjoyed the Billy and Chuck thing. There's no better tag team master technician than Billy. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was in charge of that, and I listened to him to the T. That's how I became the manager I became. Mm-hmm. You know, I listened to Billy.
He helped you.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And if it wasn't for the guys at OVW, Danny Davis's guys, Flash Flanagan, Rob Conway, Nick Dinsmore,
all those guys.
Yeah, Damager, Basham, all his core group of guys. They taught me so much in such a little bit of time. You know, even Kenny Bolin, my little round mound of sound.
The star maker.
Yeah, the star maker. He used to wear blue all the time. I used to call him my blue M&M. But you know how I got to be heel? Is because of him. Mm. When I got my leg torn, he told Cornette, let me bring him back as a heel. And Cornette, are you kidding? He's our top baby face. He'll never make heel. Jimmy says, give me 6 weeks. He will be your top heel. And sure enough, I was the top heel. He made me the role model. And even though the people knew they were smart, they were hollering. He had two heel tag teams. Batista was on one side, and it was me and Cena on the other side. And they didn't know who to cheer.
Right.
I mean, they were going crazy for both of us. And and my favorite match, my gosh, wrestling the iconic Ric Flair.
Wow, nice.
And just being in the same ring with him. And one of my favorite matches was Rey Mysterio on SmackDown at Mohegan Sun. I mean, Rey's talented. And I'll tell you, he'll run over you like a four-wheeler on a mountain. Trying to catch him is just amazing. And we did 8 minutes in Mohegan Sun. And from the start to the finish, that was just nonstop. Mm. That match, and I'd never wrestled him before, but everybody I wrestled had something different and a talent that I tried to feed off of and tried to adapt to. I tried to be like an amoeba. Mm-hmm. Like I tried to, you know, the lion salt. I tried to learn everybody's moves, mm-hmm, that where if I got in the ring, I could make them shine.
Right.
And that, to me, that was my whole goal. Is to get in the ring, heel or face, whatever, is when it was their time to shine, make them look good, you know, and keep them safe. Because we got to work.
That's right. We got another match tomorrow.
We got another match and keep everybody safe.
Yeah.
You know, there's times it's going to be, oh, I got a receipt you on that one.
Yeah.
You know, but those are mistakes. As long as they're not done on
purpose.
That's
right, on purpose, yeah. Rico, it's great talking to you, man.
Yeah.
It's good to catch up with you. Such an interesting guy, interesting life, and I miss your sideburns, though.
Yeah, so the chief don't like the sideburns.
Doesn't look good for the police force, right?
Yeah, they don't look good for this.
Thanks again to Rico Constantino. What a great guy. What an incredible career in life. He is the Forrest Gump of wrestling. But like I mentioned, Rico is really suffering. He was hurting during that interview. Bright sunlight kind of bothered him, and he was having problems walking. But he has a lot of spirit. He has a lot of heart. But he needs help with his medical expenses. I'd like to help him. And if you can help me help him by donating even a couple bucks. I know we just did this a few months for Perry Saturn a few months ago, and it was amazing results. Helped Perry a lot. Let's help Rico as well. It would go a long way and help Rico and his family. You can donate through PayPal. Rico will get 100% of anything you donate. Just go to paypal.com and send the money to WWERicoConstantino@gmail.com. Please help him out. He could use it. He's a great guy, as you heard. Thank you for helping. And before we wrap things up on a lighter note, let's see what Mundy, Truly, and Gage from Team Tiger Awesome have cooked up for today.
It's tough out there for police. And if you're one of our boys in blue, we know just how alone you might feel. Every cop deserves a buddy. That's why I created the app, Copper. When you download Copper, C-O-P-R, you'll see a slew of smiling, uniformed faces just waiting for the chief to force you together with. But you can't work with everyone. And that's where our 13-point rating system helps your chief match you up just wrong. We examine everything from suicidal tendencies, cleanliness, likelihood of shooting your partner in the ass, even your likeliness to touch a black man's radio. All of it to help you find that special someone who annoys you in all of the right ways, but'll have your back when the chief has your badge. Copper, that's C-O-P-R. You may jump off the roof alone, but when you fall into the dumpster, there's going to be a buddy beside you. You can download it from the App Store or find out more by listening to the Team Tiger Awesome Show every Sunday right here on the Jericho Network and Podcast One.
If only we'd had that app for nothing to report, maybe my character would have been teamed up with a better cop character than Mundy's, Moses. What's his name? Moses Grundy? What the hell is his name? Don't remember. If you haven't seen Nothing to Report, it's on YouTube. It's hilarious. It's the digital series that Mundy and I and Truly and Gage did for Comedy Central. Go check it out. So if you want more of Nothing to Report style crazy antics and stuff like that, jokes and humor that Team Tiger Awesome dreams up, and I don't just mean apps and products. You need to go to Apple Podcasts and hit subscribe right now to listen to the Team Tiger Awesome Show. You'll get the new episodes delivered automatically every Sunday morning and give them a 5-star rating review as well. Please do the same for Rock Talk with Mitch LaFon. Every Monday, Mitch gets the biggest stars in rock and roll music and has great conversations with them. He had Richard Marx this week. Richard Marx has a podcast Podcast One, and he specifically requested Mitch to do an interview with him. And don't forget about Raven. The Raven Effect is my new favorite podcast on the Jericho Network. This week it's Billy Corgan and Raven talking about wrestling fan fiction. Oh boy, yeah, that gets pretty raunchy. Also about the history of blackface. Very interesting stuff. Silent movies, World War II. Really funny, interesting, great stuff with Raven. He's going to get more into his wrestling career as well. You're going to hear more of that over the next few weeks. And more of Killing the Town with Storm and Cyrus, Beyond the Darkness 5 days a week, and of course the flagship show, Keeping It 100 with Conan. All of those shows are very entertaining. Go do it now, and do it for your favorite podcast, of course. That's me, Talk is Jericho, and I want you to give me reviews and ratings. My goal is to get 2,000 reviews on iTunes. We're already over 1,500. We're on our way. It really makes a difference. It helps us with advertisers and just gives us more focus and more of a spotlight for all of the great things that we're doing. So a shout out to everyone for leaving a 5-star rating and comment, including Crad2, Wubba1, Danny Rowe, Spec009, Primo Legacy, LP Freak, The Dr. Jose, Billy Madison's Drunk Penguins, that's a new listener, glad to have you aboard Talk is Jericho, Bland Yoshi, and I Am Decibels. And I appreciate all the 5-star ratings in the comments. And a big thank you to this episode's tremendous sponsors and all of you for supporting DDP Yoga. Go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho to get 30% off the DDP Yoga Now app and all DDP Yoga related merch. I want to thank Lyft. Sign up to drive at lyft.com/Jericho, L-Y-F-T, lyft.com/Jericho. Get a $500 new driver bonus. And of course, TrueCar, Geico, so many great sponsors and so many great listeners. Thank you for listening. Keep listening for the 60-second AP News headlines coming up next. And this Wednesday, next week, after this tremendous weekend that I know we're all going to have, we're going to be rocking it. They're with the returning destroyer. Samoa Joe is back on Talk is Jericho. Last time we spoke to him, he had just left TNA and his future was uncertain. Now we're speaking to him just as he is starting to make a huge impact on the WWE main roster. Joe is a great guy. He's a great brother, even if he did beat me on Raw last week. But I was robbed, I say. I was robbed, yeah. You're going to love him. He's great. He loves... He's a good talker and he's got lots to say, and he likes Godzilla as well. So we're going to talk all about that with Samoa Joe returning. And in the meantime, and in between time, that's it. Another fine edition of Talk to Jericho. Stay hard, stay hungry. Peace, love, and hugs, and a big yeah, boy. We'll see you next week. Be cool.
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.